Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on all Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Look, it's no secret that for podcasters, influencers, and other content creators, branding is a major component in what you do. As a podcaster, I interact with people from all walks of life. Things move fast in conferences, meetings, meets and greets, and keynotes. And those you meet in these events are only long enough to exchange contact information for a later date when things slow down. That is, if they slow down, right? At my age, I can't remember all my social media handles to share at these fast-paced network events. But this dilemma is now a thing of the past with Contap, the first physical link in bio solution. That's right, I can now turn my interactions into opportunity with a simple tap or scan, and just like that, I instantly shared my website, social media handles, store, and podcast with anyone I choose to share. Contap comes in several physical devices. Since I'm always carrying my car keys around, I'm a big fan of the key fob, but no matter what device you choose, key fob, rubber bracelet, QR card, or button sticker, your branding information is quickly and securely shared using NFC technology. Turn everyday interactions into opportunity by sharing what matters. Click the link in the show notes to get 25% off your first purchase by using the promo code REDISCOVER. Be sure to use that link to get your discount. ContapTap is short for Connect Tap and is spelled C-O-N-N-T-A-P. And again, the promo code is Rediscover, all in the show notes. Trust me, a lot of my guests are entrepreneurs, coaches, and motivational speakers, and I'm recommending this to them as well. And in the spirit of networking and making connections, you can't go wrong. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. From his 9-year battle with alcohol addiction that almost took his life, my special guest then battled with depression and anxiety. He then discovered the transforming power of mushrooms and natural supplementation. Now he's on a mission to help others do the same. He's the founder and chief vision officer of Mindful Meds, a premium supplement company that's revolutionizing mental health and personal growth in Canada. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Mr. Keegan Downer to the show. Keegan, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here, man.
Thank you, man. So grateful to be here. Love what you're doing, man.
Oh, thank you so much. And we reciprocate in just being excited to have you here as well. So let's go ahead and unpack this, Keegan. When the depression and anxiety took over in your battle with alcohol addiction, was that your body's chemical response to noticing a change or so?
Oh, man, that's a seriously interesting question. You know, my journey to depression was interesting because I had this window of life, really challenging kind of first start to life as a kid, but then had this pocket of time that was just electric. I loved who I was, loved the way that I was showing up in the world. So that was between like 14 and 22, man. Like I would not have traded my life with anybody in the world, man. Like I honestly loved who I was, the way that I was showing up and the impact that I was making in the world. And then almost overnight, things shifted, man. I hit my first pocket of depression between 22 and 23. Yeah. And very quickly started to kind of numb some of the pain that I was feeling simply with alcohol. And you know, for me, man, like there's generation upon generation upon generation in men in my family lineage that struggled with alcohol.
Yeah.
And I swore that it was never going to be me. And yeah, it kind of, I guess my journey on the darker, the more struggling side, the adversity side, the things that I've overcome really started with almost throwing myself off a 28-story building in New York City when I was 23 years old.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So maybe we start there or pick any thread you'd like.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I appreciate right there that, you know, that you're suggesting here. And, you know, the crazy irony behind all this, from my understanding, is, you know, trying to mask it or numb it with alcohol, where at the same time, alcohol is known as a depressant, you know, it's just compounded. Right. I mean, but that's all hindsight. And and the one going through it, I guess, is one of the last to know or recognize from what I've learned. But let's talk about that. I mean, were there life circumstances and changes in life circumstances that kind of brought on the depression? You know, I'm thinking from a cause and effect type standpoint. So, you know, you're going through life, you're showing up the way you want to show up, and then you have some life circumstances that happen, and then you kind of mask that with alcohol, and then you get depressed, and then and so forth. What was the sequence there?
You know what, man? The sequence there, and you nailed it. Like, it was one night changed the trajectory of the next 9 years of my life. And I think the humanness in all of us, you know, the ability to make a mistake. This was my biggest mistake in my life. And I had a one night stand on my university girlfriend and with somebody in my class, man. And I literally overnight shattered my heart. My piece of my soul was taken because, honestly, man, I never saw myself as that person. Literally never, ever thought I'd do something like that.
Right.
And of course it happened. And, you know, part of my escaping what happened was to try to hide it and pretend like it never happened with alcohol. And so I kind of hid from the truth of everything, just trying to put a lid on that. And, you know, at 22 years old, man, I went and had this summer job down in the US, which I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And I worked in Portland for a summer. I was doing this like door-to-door sales, selling alarm systems. It sounds insane, but I actually picked it up really, really well. I was the rookie of the year for my office.
Yeah.
And they invited me to go to New York the next year and be, you know, kind of a manager of this group. Mm-hmm. It was an honor because it was like, you know, it was just like, again, like I was showing up for myself. I was proud of myself. I sucked in the beginning of knocking these doors, man. Let me tell you, I didn't sell one for the first 30 days.
Wow.
30 days straight. And then things shifted. We, you know, so there is some positive here. But yeah, when I got to New York, man, I had been drinking for almost 100 straight nights. So the version of me that showed up on this plane and landed in New York and started showing up to these meetings, dude, I was 40 pounds overweight. I was drinking every single night. I had alcohol in my breath. And to be honest with you, I didn't expect to return home. I honestly was so checked out. I was so depressed.
Yeah.
I never, ever thought I'd ever get my life back. So I made a pact to myself that I was going to kill myself in New York.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
My. So this is almost like premeditated.
Oh, man. I gave up. I hated... Yeah. All of a sudden, I went from this guy with this trajectory that still to this day, I have never gotten back in my life. And and then I was the guy that, you know, was living with so much guilt and shame and sadness and victimhood and all the things, man.
Yeah.
And to me, the only exit strategy that I had was, I don't think I'm going to be able to overcome. Now I'm an addict, man. And I was the only person that really knew at that stage because I could mask it with humor and, you know, all the things, you know, comedy, I suppose. But really deep down inside, man, I knew I was freaking in rough shape. And I couldn't see the light at that point in time. the only thing, Aubrey, that kept me from jumping off this balcony, I literally had my waist, I was bending down over the ground from this rooftop of the apartment that we were staying in. There was a garbage strike in New York City that summer, so it was just covered in trash.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking down and thinking, holy shit, my mom and dad are going to have to come to New York. They're doing a trip around the world for their retirement, man. And my mom was in her dream place. And I realized that they're going to have to come and scrape my fucking body off the ground. Excuse my language.
Gosh, no, that's and, okay. Yeah.
Wow. And honestly, man, the only thing that saved me is my older sister, one of the greatest human beings, 1 year older than me.
Yeah.
She was getting married about 30 days after this moment. And I was the MC of the wedding, man. So my family had no idea that I was going through the darkest time of my entire life. And I just kind of felt totally alone, totally, in some ways, I guess, abandoned. And and I had this whisper, man. And to be honest with you, at that point in time, there was no, I couldn't even entertain the thought of there being a God because of the shape that I was in.
Right.
And but I heard a whisper, man. And it was just get to Kaylee's wedding. That's all you got to do. Just get to Kaylee's wedding.
Yeah.
And I landed back in Calgary after now I've been drinking for 200 straight days, dude.
Yeah.
And I remember walking through the Calgary airport and giving my passport to the customs agent. And my hand is doing this. If you're just simply listening, it was shaking as if I had Parkinson's.
Right. Right.
And then I had to go and MC this wedding and pretend everything was okay.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah.
But guess what, brother? I hung on long enough to get to that wedding. And that night I met my wife, the woman that was just helping us get the audio going.
Incredible.
So I met her at that wedding. We didn't get married until almost 13 years later.
Sure. Sure.
My best friend in the world and the woman that I'm married to today came in that night.
That would not have happened, brother.
Dude, of course not, man. Right?
No.
So, like, if you're going through something dark and you're going through something that is just so unbearably challenging today, I swear to God, just hang on. Just hang on. Because you have no idea what's coming. And I promise you, for those that figure out how to hang on, miracles happen, brother. Miracles happen. At least in my life, it did.
Wow. Keegan,
but Aubrey, before the miracle happened, I had another 9 years of alcohol addiction to the point where I was the first guy at the liquor store at 9 o'clock in the morning. So that was when I was 23. I didn't go to freaking rehab until I was 31, man. So I lived in such darkness, such pain, such agony. I wanted to kill myself every single day for 9 straight years, man.
So you were still in a dark place.
Oh, big time, man. And like, you know, what the shame and the guilt, like I said, and because you don't think you're going to survive, man, or nobody want to survive, you're not really planning for the future, right? So
right.
All the money I'm earning is going to alcohol and other, you know.
Yeah, other things that kind of accompany it, right?
Totally, man. Totally.
Yeah, yeah. Keegan, this is absolutely incredible, my man. I mean, like you said, and thank you for the strong words for the benefit of the listeners. Hang in there. Hang on. There is hope. You may feel like you're at the end of your rope. You may feel like that there's no other way out than just taking an easy terminal way, which, you know, is nothing further from the truth. There is always a way out where you can transform. Now, there's a couple things you mentioned just here that kind of resonated with me. And I'd love it if you can share some, maybe a level deeper insight again, for the sake of the listeners. The first thing is you said you were in a very dark space, no doubt. Right. One part that you mentioned was you had some deep, deep, dark feelings of abandonment. Can you kind of maybe, peel that layer a little bit and say, you know, I mean, is this self abandonment from like maybe an abyss that you've took yourself in to where, you know, we can start to fester resentment for other people thinking they abandoned us when really we kind of absorbed it ourselves, or was it a true sense of abandonment? If you can just kind of share that feeling.
Holy man. Are you open to me sharing a bit of a story, just a bit of a deeper part of my journey?
Please do. Absolutely.
You know, I spoke, kind of opened things up with like some of the highlights of my life. And to be honest, I do a bit of speaking here and there. I've been on a few podcasts, and most of what I share is about the pain and the challenge. So I often skip over the highlight reel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And honestly, man, it's such a big, beautiful part of me, because I peaked early. I peaked young, but at least I got to see what I was made of, brother. And I'm so grateful for that. So, but when I was 5 years old, my parents made this decision to put me into grade one. So I was a year behind almost everybody. When I graduated high school, as far as I'm aware, I was the youngest graduate in my entire class. And I was at a school of about 2,000 students. So, you know, my parents, like many kids, went through a divorce when I was probably 4 years old, or separation.
Right.
And my father's Irish. Mm-hmm. And so they met here in Canada. But he ended up going back to the UK after they separated. And my dad was, you know, as a kid, like all of us, man, like he was my idol, really.
Right.
Like I loved the guy. He was so fun and playful. And then all of a sudden he disappeared, and now I'm put into school a year early, man. And I'm not picking things up. I am not ready to do 3 + 3. You know, or whatever the hell it was. I just wanted to be out running around.
Yeah.
And so by the time I was in grade three, they diagnosed me with a learning disability. And man, the weight of that learning disability, the weight of, you know, my father going to back to England, starting another family and feeling abandoned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and really not even knowing this, dude, until I grew up and I was like, holy fuck, I guess there is.
Yeah.
There's all of that. That was insane. But so I had this really unique life. I had so much love. I had, you know, a family that my mom is still with my stepdad, and he's an amazing guy with an amazing family.
Yeah.
All of, you know, my parents all worked in the field of helping other people.
Yes.
And so my dad had his master's in psychology. Mm-hmm. He was building social programs for the underdog in the UK in the 1990s, man. So like he was building, you know, programs for the addicts and the homeless.
Yeah.
The challenge, you know, so from grade three until the 1 year after high school, every single summer, my sister and I went to England for the entire summer.
Wow. So okay.
I grew up with this foundation of love and support and routine and family dinners and parents that came to the baseball game and drove me to
very
you know,
important,
you know? Mm-hmm. And so I had all of that. And then we got to England every summer and my dad didn't have any rules, man. We would be eating whatever the hell we wanted, whenever we wanted.
Yeah.
And that was at some capacity, his way of showing love, because he never actually ever found real love from his own family as a kid. He was a runaway and lived on the streets of England at 14 and ended up getting his life saved. So, but he had a drinking problem, man. So he showed up incredibly during the day, but at night he drank and you had to walk on eggshells all summer long, man. And you got to be damn careful about showing any sensitivities or tears or all these things, man. So, you know, so grateful for it all today, Aubrey, to be honest, man. I am not doing the work that I'm doing today. I've got a photo of my dad. Every time I do a podcast, I bring this out. So grateful for him and the whole journey.
Yeah.
But maybe some of that makes a bit of sense, and feel free to pick up anywhere.
Well, you know what? That highlight reel you shared there, Keegan, I really, really appreciate that. And trust me, I mean, you know, I'm no therapist or anything, but I can see some correlation, you know, from the topic of abandonment, right? And any spot or space that you're in at any point in your life, having endured what you've endured starting at 4 years old, I can see that start to creep back in, you know, at any point in your life, that you start to feel abandoned for whatever reason, you know.
Yeah.
And And so I can truly get that. And then we have ways of kind of working ourselves up and self-festering as well. And then it just compounds from there. But I really, really appreciate you unpacking that for us to kind of provide some clarity to that question, Keegan. The second thing you mentioned that really resonated with me, and I want to know if you can share this insight for the benefit of the listeners. Okay, when you were slowly, gradually increasing the number of days that you were, you know, going drinking alcohol. And, you know, from the time you got your job and was sent to New York, and then when you went to the wedding and then, you know, days beyond that, days, months, maybe even years beyond that. And I feel like you were functioning from a functionality standpoint. You were functioning. However, I just want to, I don't think people who are functioning and they're drinking, you know, even if they go to the liquor store, first one to show up at 9 a.m., you know, I don't think they're trying to function to pull the wool over, you know, anyone that's in their space, whether it's family members, coworkers, you know, teammates, what have you. I think there's a deeper reason for continuing to function despite or in spite of this addiction. Can you share some insight on what drives you to continue functioning, you know, before making that pivotal decision to go to rehab?
Dude, this is going to sound dramatic, but like I was so checked out that I was praying to God to take my life. I mean, I honestly never saw that I was ever going to be able to make a comeback. So this is now 9 years of struggling with addiction. And by the ninth year, I was the first guy at the liquor store. And now I'm literally praying to die. And all of a sudden, man, I start losing feelings in my arms and my legs. And my chest is about to explode. Yeah. And I get taken to the hospital. And they ran my blood work, and I'll never forget the doctor coming in and her jaw beating wide open and going, holy shit, like I have never seen a blood glucose level this high without somebody slipping into a coma. Wow. And she goes, you, just so you know, are a type 1 diabetic and we need to keep you here for a while. So during that hospital stint, which, by the way, in the 9 years I spent, I had many hospital stints. Pancreatitis, you know, multiple hospital stints, one for a month, you know, and my body was giving up, man. And but the wild part about where this story is going is when I was hospitalized, my family, my mom and my stepdad, Glenn, my wife at the time, we'd been kind of together for 3 or 4 years at that stage. And I'll never forget my rock bottom moment that shifted everything for me was I started to replay in my head what my funeral was going to look like. Oh, wow. And I literally looked at every person that showed up at my funeral and every word that was said about my life. And I went, holy shit, this is not the guy. Right. That, like I was sharing with you, that guy from 14 to 22, man, like that guy. That funeral looked a lot different. And all I wanted to do was just an opportunity to rewrite that script.
Yeah.
And I got super blessed, man, because I'll tell you, my parents didn't grow up with money. Money was always, you know, a hot topic in our home.
Sure.
But it's still like lower middle class. But man, like, you know, they sent me to rehab. My parents offered me this gift to go to rehab, and they let me choose. And I had one friend in the world at that point that had already been to rehab. And I said, I want to go to where she went because it freaking worked. And I'll tell you right now, that girl that helped me get into rehab is the most successful female entrepreneur that I know. And so, yeah, you know, as dark as this is, brother, I hope that we can share a bit of light as well.
Oh, no, for sure. And thank you for sharing that. That is the pivotal point, right? And yeah. And then of course, you know, I mean, there's more that you've done to grow and transform, and you know, we take steps forward and back, but the trend is moving in the right direction, to where we get to where you are today. But if you can, before we talk about mindful meds, I'd love to learn about how you were introduced to mushrooms and other natural supplements.
So I got out of rehab, $70,000 in debt. I had a business that was just hanging on by a thread, literally by a thread.
Yeah.
I rebuilt it in my first year, reorganized who I was hanging out with, started attending AA meetings, and started listening to just ultra positive content. And very slowly, man, it took about a year, but my confidence started to come back. My ability just to like talk to people was starting to come back. I was crawling out of my shell.
Yeah.
And a massive opportunity came into my lap, and I jumped on it. All of a sudden I went from a small business to a big business. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of money involved. There was a lot of, I was so underprepared for the leap that I took. I think, you know, so many of us are, right? But we just gave it a shot regardless.
That's right.
And what ended up happening, I didn't know it at the time, but I raised $780,000 to start this business.
Yeah.
And 450 of that came from my roommate in rehab that I helped get him through a heroin addiction. Swear to God, brother. So like, you never know when the bounce is coming, man.
Right.
And luckily all of that money ended up getting paid back to these investors. Yeah. But it turned out that we had gotten ourselves involved in what I can later look at as a Ponzi scheme. I did not know it at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a technology-based company that just couldn't get the technology right. Mm-hmm. And they kept on, you know, bullshitting us, saying it's coming, but really, man, they were just draining the resources, and almost 500 people ended up losing their life savings. Luckily, none of that happened to Canadians, but you know, you can imagine what that's like going to work every day. And all of a sudden, man, like your world is collapsing so quickly that you're panicking. So I started to get terrible anxiety. I thought, oh my God, like, for sure, I'm about to start drinking again.
Yeah.
And I blew the whistle on myself. I called my family. I called my wife and I said, guys, we got to have a family meeting. I am about to relapse. And if we don't figure out how to help myself, I'm super effed. Because I was having anxiety attacks and I had never had those before. So through that process, I ended up getting introduced to a mycologist, which is a mushroom farmer. This is 2019, man. So you know, when I do speaking engagements, to put it in perspective, Audrey, if there was 100 people in the room, I was at an event on Monday, and I say, how many of you have microdosed? Almost everybody, not always, but a huge percentage of people have tried it now.
Yeah.
But if I ask how many people microdosed in 2019, almost never do I see a hand go up. So it was a way ahead of its time, in the sense that like the boom had not happened. It was still super taboo.
Yeah.
Unless you were like an elite biohacker, I don't think you're microdosing at the time.
Right. Right.
So I ended up getting introduced to this guy, and he all he wanted to do was save the world with mushrooms. And I kind of thought, damn, I like where this guy's going. I need some help. And I went to Walmart. I bought a pill press, 100 pill press. And I had never microdosed in my life at this stage. And he gave me some mushrooms. I ground them up, had a friend actually make the capsules because I had no idea how to use the press.
Yeah.
And, and I just kind of thought to myself, I'm going to keep a journal, and I am going to wait and document this entire thing, because there was almost no clinical data with microdosing at that stage.
Yeah.
And I had this prolific breakthrough, brother. I you know, day 13, I'll never forget it. I ended up writing a 3-page letter in my journal, which turned into a phone call to my business partner. And I parted ways with that business. I lost my life savings. I mean, it was all gone, dude. Everything that I had rebuilt just gone, stripped away again. Wow. And, but it was an interesting moment, because I had never problem solved that way before. It was just like this aha moment of going, holy shit, there's something to this medicine, because it reorganized my pathways in my brain to attack this massive problem. And I stayed off the booze, and I also got the exact exit. Although there was no money involved, I was able to just sever ties and get the hell out of it.
Yeah.
And for the first time in really for years, dude, I had some time on my hands. And so I started researching and could not digest enough research around mushrooms, John Hopkins University, every single thing that I could get my hands on.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden my heart started to open up and I felt what I believe to be my true purpose. I had never felt anything like this in my life, dude. I'd been looking for it for my entire life. This feeling of this is it. This is what I'm meant to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I literally put the same medicine that I took for those 13 days. I ended up putting together the very first non-publicly traded microdosing study that has ever been done. I got 40 people involved. It was literally almost 5 months of my full-time work to put this study together. You know, there's going to be people that laugh at this, but like the reality is, man, is I took this as seriously as I possibly could. I found a friend who had a background in psychology. We figured out how to put a questionnaire together to get an evaluation, a baseline evaluation as to where people were at with their mental health, their addiction levels, their creativity, their libido. I share all of this online. I'll share it with, you know, your community after as well. Mm-hmm. And I provided the medicine, and I taught these people everything that I had learned over the 5 months. And I was so excited to share. And honestly, man, I had 40 new people that I had almost none of them I had met, two people I knew, and it filled almost overnight. And when we ran the same questionnaire after the 42 days, I then hired a company to tally the data and show the way that the needle moved in these people's lives. And I am telling you, not only did one girl come forward and say it saved her life, man. 35-year-old woman that had been in therapy since she was 14 years old and was about to kill herself. The study was the last resort for her. She comes out and shares all of this, by the way, on a testimonial. Mm. And that was it for me, man. I got to witness people's lives change right in front of me. And then the journey began. You know, how do we bring this to the people in the safest, most consistent, and the highest vibrational frequency way humanly possible? And that's been the mission that we've been on, man, for the last, I guess, 5.5, 6 years.
My goodness, man. That is so, so incredible. I mean, everything from what you mentioned earlier, from having this sense of self-awareness, even before microdosing, to tell your family, we need a meeting, I'm going to relapse, to taking the strategic approach to microdose and journal your journey through microdosing and just revealing just some of the mind-blowing breakthroughs that you've had with clear thinking. Sounds like you were better able to make, you know, quick snap decisions that were resolutions, not perpetuating things, and all sorts of other things, man. I mean, bringing this to people, and like the young lady who did this as a last resort. I mean, you are one of the few people, Keegan, that can be outward focus in what you're doing to ask people to take this study or try this experiment or try this exercise or activity, and to get that feedback of this being the last resort. Everyone's in a different place and space, you know, when you meet them. I mean, did you ever think that you would meet someone who is at the end of their rope and they're like, I'll try this, and if it doesn't work, that's it? I mean, my goodness. I mean, that's, whew. I mean, not trying to put any pressure on you or anyone doing that.
It was really powerful. You know, I watched my dad struggle with his mental health.
Yeah.
Really my entire upbringing. You know, my first job was helping him peel potatoes and carrots, and he ran a drop-in center every Sunday. So my first job was to go to this drop-in center and meet with people that were just a hair away from being on the street, dude. And I just learned to love these people and see them in a different light. So my upbringing, man, although it was challenging, I mean, I'm so grateful for it because, man, it led me here. It literally led me to where I needed to be, which was just simply wanting to help people. That's the only thing that makes any sense as to why I survived. Yeah. And it just makes sense to me now. But like, literally, man, that was my dad. My dad just wanted that as well. But I can't tell you how many times my dad said to me he wanted to kill himself or was standing in the kitchen with a fucking knife the size of my leg and threatening to chop his arm off. I don't know, man. I wasn't desensitized to it, but I can tell you it gave my life so much meaning. And it still has, and it's honestly going to make me cry. I mean, honestly, brother, without this project, I don't even know where I'd be.
Oh, Keegan, incredible purpose, my man. Incredible purpose. Can you unpack a little bit more for us about mindful meds?
Yeah.
What sets mindful meds apart and its truest essence?
Totally, man. I mean, I think the study gave me this opportunity because in 2019, this industry didn't even exist. Mm-hmm. You can literally go online today and there's thousands of mushroom companies. So I think the thing that differentiates us the most, 95% of the mushrooms that are grown in North America and even around the world are grown in someone's garage or closet. And for the most part, I think that's okay. Like, I'm not going to beat anything up on that.
Right.
But it leaves room for challenges. And so right out of the gate, we have a purpose-built mushroom facility. It's ran by a mycologist so that's a mushroom farmer that is very much like me, man, a former addict, alcoholic, and was looking for purpose in his life. Mm-hmm. We have used the same mycologist for 4.5 years. So he grows the greatest mushrooms. They're all Canadian grown, very close to home. All of the other nootropics and adaptogens that we use in our products are also almost all Canadian grown. But even after we get our psilocybin, so psilocybin is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms.
Okay.
And so just like kind of the THC is to cannabis.
Yeah.
And so when we get our psilocybin mushrooms back from our grower, from our facility, we then send those mushrooms to a 3-pipe holding indigenous elder that literally tests them for any imperficiencies. So the indigenous have been using this medicine for, hundreds upon hundreds, if not thousands of years. Oh, and my. It was always important to me to figure out how to encompass the medicine back to the indigenous. And we found a 3-pipe holding indigenous elder who is almost 70 years old, but he's been working with frequency technology for over 50 years.
Wow.
So he tests our mushrooms for excessive mold content. Of course, there's going to be mold in mushrooms, but I'm talking excessive mold content, heavy metals. And honestly, so I believe through these processes, he then blesses our mushrooms. The crazy thing about, mushrooms, they are so intelligent, Aubrey, that they can pick up the vibrational frequency of the people that literally handle them. So we have a policy in our business that if someone's having an off day, if someone's struggling, and listen, this happens to all of us.
Yeah.
But if someone's angry or holding resentment or, any of those emotions, nobody goes into the pressing room. Literally, it's totally off limits. So we have, well over a million microdosing capsules in the marketplace today, Aubrey.
Yeah.
And we have less than a 1% return rate on our products. We make the safest, the most consistent, and the highest vibrational frequency mushroom medicine that you can find anywhere in the world today, period.
And you work directly with the organic farmers that source this.
We do. I mean, I've got a direct relationship to both. Yeah. All the mycologists and the mushroom farmers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying, if I get this straight.
Can I share kind of something funny?
Sure, sure.
On that note.
Yeah.
Listen, it wasn't always this way. When I finished the study, I then went to go raise some capital because I didn't have a freaking penny to my name. Oh, wow. And so I had some friends that believed in me and believed that this industry was going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
But I still had never seen more than an ounce of mushrooms in my entire life. And I took an envelope of $20,000 Canadian dollars in an envelope and met some random dude in a back alley. And he filled up my trunk of my SUV with four black garbage bags full of magic mushrooms. And I didn't even have a client, man. I didn't even have a customer. So yes, you know, the road to get to where we are today, it wasn't just this perfect, impeccable, we're perfect road.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, it just simply wasn't that. It's never that. No. That's not who I am. That's not who we are.
That's right.
But I do stand by that statement. I truly believe that we led this industry in such a positive way.
Yeah.
Community, education. If you're hearing about this for the very first time, we offer a free 62 page. When we built it, man, it was way before AI. Yeah. And this is 400 to 500 hours of our research put into a document that we give away for free to people. Mm-hmm. So if Aubrey, I'm going to send it to you. And let your community, your beautiful community, man, access all of this information.
Man, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. Yes, please do. We have a place where it could be accessible for all the listeners. That would be really, really appreciated, Keegan. And, man, I mean, this is tremendous. I mean, even what you mentioned earlier about how in tune the mushrooms are with your energy and your vibe and your frequency, right? You want to be in the best of mindsets and I guess, you know, emotionally stable and you know, stable when you are harvesting or working with these mushrooms. They pick up on that energy. So
listen, this is closer to legalization in the US than it is here in Canada for the most part. But you know, when you're working in the gray market, man, you attract a certain kind of player.
Sure.
And some people are just pure and have the right intent. And hey, man, I'm for those people. I'm one of them. Yeah.
Yes.
But it leaves a lot of room for the other players. And I don't think a lot of these companies operate the way that we do. So, I think the industry as a whole, there's a lot of people with some tremendous intentions.
Yeah.
But like every industry in the freaking world, man, you've got the other side of it too.
Yeah. And no one starts out perfect. No one starts out perfect. And from what I'm picking up that you're mentioning here and that you're sharing with me, Keegan, I mean, there's a sense of thoroughness that your company has adapted over the years. Like we said, you didn't start perfect. No one does. But like the company I work for, okay, we talk about Kaizen, which is a Japanese term for, you know, continuous improvement. And so in the spirit of Kaizen and continuous improvement, you've reflected on the bumpy starts and things we could do better to improve this quality and that quality and so forth. And so that thoroughness is a manifestation of those reflections and those improvements, and they're incremental. And so, you know, that to me, that sets you apart from a lot of the other players. And again, each group is in a different place in their journey. Okay, I understand that. But that's something, no matter where you are in your journey, that shouldn't go unfounded or missed, you know? So
thank you, brother.
Yeah.
And I really actually love that term. I forget about it now and again, but I can tell you, we're not afraid to look in the mirror and make improvements at every turn. And my journey from the launch to today.
Yes.
Man, overall net positive journey, but honestly, brother, I had a pocket of time where I revisited alcohol for about 9 months.
Went
through some serious darkness, man. I've also had serious health problems, dude. I spent, you know, because of the drinking, two end of life, or not end of life, but near death experiences
with surgeries
that saved my life. And so I'm not here to say it's been perfect, brother, but I am here to say that I get dusted off and I try to come back stronger every time.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Keegan, it's the listeners that they're truly attracted and attached to your authenticity, to how genuine you are in being transparent, and quite frankly saying it hasn't been a perfect journey. We yeah. didn't get the perfect start. And yes, I've had setbacks, you know, I mean, yeah. it humanizes you and it makes it realistic for others who are inspired by your story, who are looking for answers, looking for a way, looking to have hope. Right. And you plant the seed for that, brother. And I can't commend you enough for not only what you're doing with Mindful Meds, but being the true example in your story and living your truth now and your purpose. Yeah. That is a walking example of hope. You know, people know that there's hope and people know that, hey, if it can happen to him, it can happen to me. Keegan, this has been an absolutely delightful conversation. You have really, truly given us some inspiration, anecdotes, and insights behind microdosing, behind just how you started the business, behind your own journey and how, you know, you've endured those dark days of despair and turned things around. And obviously, it wasn't a light switch overnight, right? It's a process. Take two steps forward, three steps back, and then four steps forward, and just keep that trend going. So, Keegan, how can the listeners follow you, connect with you, learn more about the great work that you're doing up there in Canada?
Yeah, thank you, man. So mindfulmeds.io is our website. Half of our products, by the way, have psilocybin. The other half of our products do not. They're totally what we call functional. Okay. And we can ship those worldwide completely legally. And, you know, all of our products are backed by science and data. That is what has driven us to build this business, right? It was the study. It was the research. How can we make the best product? Every single Thursday, I open up my day to free coaching calls. They're only 15 minutes long, but I help people get aligned with the medicine, listen to their stories, their individual stories. Myself and my colleague, who has been a friend of mine for over 20 years, Shanna Pereira. So at mindfulmeds.io, if you just simply want, you know, to learn more, I offer that for free every Thursday. You can book a coaching call under one-on-one coaching. You can find our microdosing guide and, you know, you can find out all about us online. Our Instagram is mindfulmeds_CA. And my personal Instagram is Keegsy, KEEGSY 1111. Give me that. I'm not a big social media guy. I'm trying to do better at it. But you know, would love to connect. I'm super grateful for this, my brother.
Oh, fantastic, Keegan. I can't thank you enough, sir. What we're gonna do is we're gonna have the website. We're going to have your social media handle, both for Mindful Meds and for your personal website, if you don't mind, all accessible in the episode show notes for the listeners. We're also going to talk about that that free coaching session, because not only is this a product that you provide for people, you also provide education, and education is knowledge, and knowledge is power. And so, I mean, that right there shows your true authenticity in not just trying to push a product, but to educate people on this as well. We're going to have all that in the show notes. They're going to click these links. They're going to connect with you while listening to this wonderful conversation. Keegan Downer, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, sir. I truly appreciate your insights, the clarity you've shown, and the inspiration for our listeners. And I truly, genuinely hope we can stay in touch, brother, and have you on the show in the near future for sure.
All right, Aubrey. Thanks for the opportunity, man. It means a lot to me. And thanks for staying. If you stuck around to the end, my God, thank you. It means so much to be able to share my story and beyond grateful for this opportunity.
And we truly, truly reciprocate and appreciate that and appreciate you as well, Keegan. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, we're never alone, and hope is always around the corner. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. You know, it all comes down to it. We're all just roadies on this journey of life. But it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Roads Rediscovered. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.